Weird hunters are carrying their prey into a Gothic tower. A living piglet, some fowl, a lobster, sausages. One is carrying wine bottles under his arms. Another has spoon and fork strapped to his back like bayonets. From above, from the windows and embrasures, the stuffed feasters are vomiting and defecating to make room for more gluttony. This James Ensor etching Sibylle gave me on her deathbed. When I first met her, she was already marked by her illness. By coincidence, I became witness to some of her last stations. Her last public reading, Sibylle was a novelist, and her last dinner with a large group of friends, where two got into an argument so heated it turned briefly violent, which amused Sibylle to no end. I sometimes thought that she was playing her environment like marionettes with her sharp, piercing looks and her merry mischief. Her mind and spirit, which was fiery, was the last to leave her. Her body, though, betrayed her much sooner, with multiple sclerosis, which caused her pain so unbearable that she finally organized an assisted suicide for herself. I knew, therefore, that it would be my last time seeing her when Sibylle gave me the answer. It was propped up in her living room, where she was lying in a hospital bed in front of her large writing desk, leaning against the wall, having been taken down like most pictures already. Even though Sibylle was still in her apartment and would also die there, she had begun to give away her possessions. We shared a love for Ensor. Sibylle had written about him, essays for her own collections and for exhibition catalogues. So we spent our last conversation talking about Ensor's art. At the end she told me, "Fritz, I want you to take the Ensor with you, it's my gift." For a moment I wasn't sure whether I could accept a gift so valuable. But then Sibylle looked around mischievously and asked the gods, "But will he live up to such a present?" That's when I knew I was allowed to take it with me. It's strange. The aura created by now-deceased hands. The trace of genius on a piece of paper. James Ensor, 1896, is how he signed the etching with pencil. I hung it up in my apartment. Sibylle had it framed very nicely. And I felt the presence of history. As if I were really a part of it. When I sat at my desk drawing, I felt Ensor's delicate lines in my back and became more delicate, more subtle in my own lines. It was as if rays were emanating from this simple, joyful, evil image, which contained so much more than the first look would have you guess. And I imagined Ensor, the way he would sit in his famous house in Ostende, filled with paintings, masks, furniture, or in the printer's workshop, the scent of printer's ink and petroleum in the air, and signing my etching, en passant, and I imagined his hands doing it. A few days later, the calls and messages arrived. Sibylle's friends, who were in charge of her inheritance, for she was childless, got in touch with me. They said that the Ensor had long been promised to one of them, and that it was outrageous what happened at the bedside of a deathly ill woman. I was confused. Sibylle had been so clear-minded when we talked about Ensor and his etching in such detail. So the thought that I would have used her disorientation and illness to get my hands on the print never occurred to me. The notary would get in touch with me, they said. Also, the Ensor was included in her last will. Legal steps would be taken. I informed myself, asking a notary, who happens to be a neighbor as well. But for him, the case was clear. A gift by a person who was not legally incapacitated cannot be contested. Her illness may have influenced Sibylle's decision, but it had not taken away her freedom to decide. On the contrary, the notary's wife, a lawyer who also suffers from multiple sclerosis, became almost furious. Sibylle's friends abused the illness in her eyes to devalue Sibylle's intentions. They must have received legal advice themselves, for their tone changed. No outraged demands, but pleas followed to somehow resolve the situation. Sibylle was still alive, but I was asked not to involve her. On the one hand, it made sense to me not to bother Sibylle in her dying days with minor matters. But on the other hand, it made me skeptical. Since I knew that I would always follow Sibylle's decision, it seemed to me to be neither complicated nor inappropriate to ask her what to do with the Ensor. The date of her death had been delayed. There was some technical or legal complication. I don't know what it feels like to know the date of one's death and then have it moved. In any event, I visited Sibylle one last time. If the chance offered itself, I would ask about the Ensor. When I came into her apartment, others were already there. A courteous older man who had known Sibylle from university and who was also a writer. But Sibylle was in fact confused. She did not recognize the day or the hour. I bid farewell quickly and knew then that I could not keep the Ensor. But I did not want to hand it out to the ladies either, who had haggled about their dying friend's possession like the skeletons on some of Ensor's paintings, fighting over a herring or a hanged man. It would not have felt right. For what was Sibylle's final will? It seemed to me as if the Ensor had gone its own way, shipping the cliffs of friendship, grief, greed, and loss, to come to its own place where it only belonged to itself. That's how the idea evolved of sending owls to Athens. In the meantime, Sibylle had died. I took part in the funeral and saw some of her friends for the first time. They were crying by the grave, and I felt deeply for them. Of course, they knew Sibylle much longer and much better than I did. But I had always felt a deep connection with her, and would we not have become old friends also, if Sibylle had lived longer? The Ensor is now a part of the collection of prints at the Berlin State Museums, as a donation in memory of Sibylle. Her friends agreed to this solution. When the evening before the handover at the museum had come, I took the Ensor from my wall. The empty space pained me, and for a moment I regretted not to have given in to my desire. I would never have given the Ensor away, and someone could have inherited it from me one day. I opened the frame that Sibylle had had made, took out the print and copied it in pen and ink. Then I placed my copy back in the frame and hung it up on my wall. The next morning, I took the Ensor to the museum in a cardboard portfolio.